At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Screwtape Letters podcast friends and faithful. Our book, Confronting Evil in Our Time, is now available for pre-order and will be in stores everywhere. As Paul writes in Ephesians 6:12, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against the spiritual wickedness in high places." Confronting Evil in Our Time arms you to confront them, reject their lies, and put Jesus Christ at the center of your life. When you're finished with the book, pass it forward. Open the eyes of friends to the spiritual warfare that rages on. Galen and I have poured our hearts into the pages of this book over the past year, wrestling truth from the shadows. We need your support. Grab a copy today, and God bless.
All right, well, welcome back. Screwtape Letters podcast, Confronting Evil in Our Time. Here we are back in season two, unpacking the Easter eggs of the chapters, and we are wrapping up this season with our second to last letter of the season, letter number 30. Ian, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's been a great season covering these. I've learned so much from this exercise and got an even deeper appreciation for C.S. Lewis.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. It's fun finding one specific passage of scripture and just kind of unpacking it. Some of them I feel maybe we're forcing or reading into it a little bit, and some of them really clearly I feel C.S. Lewis definitely had in mind as he was writing these. And this one, I don't know, this one's a little bit on the fence. Why don't we actually talk about it and see what our listeners think? I think he was definitely at least had this passage in mind. I don't know if it's super explicit, but definitely undergirds the entirety of letter 30.
Yeah, and it's also the title of letter 30 in the book as well. So when people get Confronting Evil in Our Time, they'll actually be able to go to letter 30, and this is the Easter egg which is in there. So why don't you unpack it for us?
So this is getting towards the end of the letters, the end of the war, and, you know, spoiler alert, we've already done one season, getting close to the end of the patient's life. The war is getting pretty bad. It's getting very treacherous. There's bombs, intense fear and trepidation, and Screwtape and Wormwood are both vexed because this guy is not cracking. He's acting very faithful. He's acting very consistent. And I want to read one phrase at the start of this chapter. Screwtape is basically vexing and his frustration at Wormwood, saying, like, with everything that's gone on, all these air raids and all of the war. And he says, you know, basically the best you can get out of this guy is some excessive cigarette smoking is the biggest vice, which in those circumstances is not too bad. He says he's been very frightened and thinks himself a great coward and therefore feels no pride. So the demonic can't exploit pride, but he has done everything his duty demanded and perhaps a bit more. And when you just paint that picture of a guy who's views himself to be a coward, is actually quite discouraged, you know that person is not doing it in their own strength. And I think there's a passage from Ephesians chapter 6, that really explains spiritual warfare. And the essence of spiritual warfare is not a call to go engage in the battle in and of yourself. It's not a call to work in your own strength. It's not a call to work in your own might. And it's not a call to roll out your own agenda in your own power in your own time. And I think it's interesting how C.S. Lewis paints an actual literal wartime picture in the same light. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 10 says, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. And he said, goes on to say, put on the full armor of God and explain that. And I really feel that concept of being strong in the Lord, especially in the intense times of warfare, is to me the Easter egg of this chapter.
And it's not just in warfare, right? I think in this situation, this could be anyone who's struggling with deep fear. It could also be, and I'll give you an example. I had a gentleman write to me today who wanted prayer because his mother's in the hospital. And this text was super long. And he, you could tell as he's writing, he's, I'm scared what's going to happen without my mom. I'm freaking out. I don't know what to do with this. But in the same time, I'm reading in there that he's acting. So even within his fear, he's not being a coward. He's actually acting courageously. He's doing the right things. He's
right.
In the letter, the patient's actually out there helping people, get people into bomb shelters, keep them safe. This guy who texted me, he's there talking with the nurses, talking with his family, bearing it all, but being strong in the Lord.
Well, and that's exactly how we define courage as well. Remember, it's not feeling fear. It's not you know, having doubt or trepidation or any of those things, but it's maintaining a steadfast, consistent walk in the midst of the fear. And that's something that ultimately you could do it for a little while in your own strength. You can pull up your bootstraps and you could do it for a little while. But if you're really going to get through, especially the difficult seasons, that strength and that power has to come from something that's not sourced in you. And I think, I think that's hopefully what your friend's going through, is seeing that he's probably going to look back at this and say, I don't know how I got through that, but it definitely wasn't me.
No, I think he's already feeling that, which
right.
We've wrote to him several times. His mother's been in the hospital for a while. And every time people pour into him, he feels like he can make it another day and then another day. And it's something that's probably going to be a while with him. And we as brothers are there to support him. But it's the fatigue that's wearing people down that is the difficult piece, both in the letter and in this real life circumstance.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, how he says when he gets that encouragement, it was just one more day. I promise Ian and I didn't talk and set this whole thing up in the pre-show. But in this, later on in this letter, the patient is actually being tempted. Screwtape goes on to say, get him to like basically give up. Because we have a tendency to get them to think all hope is lost right before breakthrough comes. Get him to give up right before he's about to succeed, right before he's about to get relief, and build his mind to expect that he can hold on. He can be expected to endure this, but only for so long. And then once you extend that and exhaust that reasonable length of time in his mind, then he'll break and he'll give up. And again, we have a reasonable amount of time that we can endure a certain pain when we're doing something in our own strength. But I think it's interesting, the same thing that Screwtape is talking about here, you actually are hinting at the same thing with your friend.
It is. And I think in this situation, you've got a couple of choices. One of them is to just lean on hope. And for those who are listening to this who maybe don't have a good Christian faith, hope can be a bad mistress, because hope will let you down a lot. Because a lot of times when you're hoping for something, you're projecting very unrealistic wants into there. When you lean on God, I think you have that feeling that the Holy Ghost is supporting you, that you've got others that are walking with you in this. And it just leaves you with a different outcome, even if the person still doesn't get to where you want them to be. But hope becomes empty where leaning on Christ, even if the outcome doesn't get where you want it to be, Gail, and we saw this year with your mother-in-law's passing, which was, you guys weren't leaning on hope, you were leaning on the Lord to get you through it, to get the family through
it. Right. If you're ever leaning on just, you know, what defines that hope, I guess, is the thing. If I'm defining the hope by what I want for an outcome, or if I'm defining that hope by what I think is going to happen, what I think is fair, what I think is just, what I think I can handle. Satan actually knows that. He's got an understanding of how you think and how you're wired. But if that hope is defined in what the Lord says and in the Lord's sovereignty in things, that's the thing that can give a peace that surpasses understanding. And that's a good kind of a second example of what it looks like to be strong.
Yeah, because when you lean on hope and you get nothing, you have no hope and you have nothing. When you lean on God and you get a decision in your favor, then you're elated. God's come through, but that was God working. But if God doesn't come through, that's also God working. And you usually see over time, if you lean on Christ, that the outcome, whether it's what you envisioned, always ends up in being something that ends up for good. And people might go, oh, that's a trite Christian saying. But it isn't, because I've seen it so many times in my life with different things I've prayed for. And I've not got exactly what I prayed for, but yet the result after that is even better than I thought.
Hmm.
But that doesn't happen with hope. That's happenstance, and that's not really the way to lean in there. So in this letter, you've got this situation that I think a lot of our listeners can probably relate to it in their own life. When you are struggling, when you're becoming tired, when you're becoming anxious, when you're becoming fatigued, that's a time when it's, you know, if you listen to David's Psalms, that's the time to lean even further on the Lord. Mm-hmm. Go to him with your wants, go to him with your fears, you know, put it out there on God. Talk to the Father about this, because this is where you will get that sense of peace to be able to, again, one more day, and just keep moving forward like that. And, you know, I went through it with our son in the hospital. It wasn't like, okay, let's plan for next week. You were just like, how's tonight going to go? How's the next day going to go? How's the next night going to go? It was just one piece at a time, praying our way through it.
Mm. Yeah, that is good. Yeah, that is good. I mean, I think it's a good example also of just seeing, you know, God likes to make his strength known in our weakness. and that can't happen if we're trying to walk in our own strength, you know?
No, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think what people will get when you dig into Confronting Evil in Our Time, Galen and I have actually put into this book a lot of anecdotal stories, and they're real. We're not even making these up. These are pretty much word for word real. And they'll show you God's power, how it's worked in us. And we're not lucky. This is something that's worked in so many people in so many miraculous ways. But this is what you get when you lean on Christ. And I think those stories within the book will give a lot of people hope and help just bolster their faith that there is so much more that can be got when times feel really dark. And in this letter 30, the patient's dealing with a really bad situation. And I can go back to Gail and my grandparents in England. Coventry was the second most bombed city in the United Kingdom, because we had ball bearing factories, we made aircrafts, Rolls Royce was housed there. And the Germans blitzed us. I mean, they lit us up like we did Berlin and we did Dresden. And, you know, they wanted to make sure that Coventry couldn't be one of these places that could continue manufacturing. And my grandmother used to tell these stories about how the air raid sirens would go off and everyone would just bolt for the where they knew their place to shelter was. There would be certain people, like the patient in this book, would put their hard hats on. They were the home army. They would go out and they would wait for a house to be bombed or a bomb to blow up something, and they would go to just double check there was no one who didn't get to the air raid shelter. And wow. You know, these were real times that all this was actually happening. And she would talk about how you'd go from, like, you know, fear, and you thought that the world was going to end, you were going to die, to weeks of nothing, and then all of a sudden barrage balloons and air raid sirens again. And,
wow.
And you're totally thrown off kilter with it. And that was life during the Second World War, which is exactly what this patient was. He was one of those home army people. But as the Blitz got up, when Coventry eventually got blitzed, and people can read stories in history books about it, it was incendiary bombs. They didn't just want to blow stuff up. They wanted to set the whole city on fire. And England had a lot of old Tudor houses, so there's a lot of wood in houses as well. And they just wanted to burn the whole place down. They actually took out our main cathedral, Coventry's Cathedral, and they burned it to ashes. And all that was left at the end of it was like this amazing cross that was formed. And you can, again, see this online, of two burnt char beams that now make up the cross from the original burn of the cathedral.
Wow. You know, hearing you tell this story, thanks for sharing that. I mean, I love how your story and background in England really ties in. It's very on brand and on theme for the Screwtape Letters because it gives so much context. I mean, you literally have family that lived through what this guy in Letter 30 is living through. But I think it's so fitting and that, again, that C.S. Lewis wrote it this way, but the fact that God describes our struggle with the demonic, not as one as an intellectual struggle. It's not an academic struggle. It's certainly not one of flesh and strength, but it's literally a war. It's the primary analogy that he uses.
Yeah.
And that really illustrates, you know, there's that trepidation, like constant uncertainty, never knowing when an attack is going to come. Things are good for a while and you never know when suddenly you're going to get blitzed. You never know when the enemy's going to come upon you. And that's literally kind of an analogous. That's a very good analogy of what the spiritual fight is like against Satan. He's constantly trying to destroy. He's constantly trying to drop incendiary bombs.
Yeah.
He's seeking whom he may devour. And I think it's so important, both in literal physical crisis in the times of war and in the spiritual battle, that I don't know. It's such a simple, easy thing to say. Where is your strength? But to really step back and examine, you know, truly what does give me motivation to move on, to believe that I'm going to win, that cannot be something that's sourced in me. It has to be something that comes from a greater power.
Right. So be strong in the Lord. I think that is absolutely the great Easter egg in here. And the more I talk about it, the more I think it is, because we're there asked by God to, we're going to bear our cross, our daily cross. We're going to pick it up. And, you know, that comes only with basically faith. And that only comes by being strong in the Lord, because otherwise, why would you even bother?
Right.
Would you even think about it? You'd be like, right. Heck no.
The battle ultimately belongs to the Lord.
Right.
So it's a great Easter egg, a phenomenal chapter. And we are excited to be coming towards the end of the season. I also, one last, you know, talking about holding on for one more day, holding on for one more day. Folks, we've got the book coming. Stick with us. I know we've been saying that for a while. We promised it this summer. I think we're definitely going to be, it'll be summer for anyone in the Southern Hemisphere, perhaps. But we have the manuscript done. And what we're finding is just by the time you get to the end of a book, you have to do the intro, you have to do like a preface, and you have to make sure it's formatted correctly. So the book is done. It's just all that little ticky-tacky stuff. We're working overtime on top of the other loads that we have and things that we have on our plates. But we are very excited. I think we're, Ian and I should have in our hands a physical author copy for final review next week.
Yeah.
I would say certainly, and then I don't anticipate many corrections, if any. So I'm thinking very, very soon, perhaps as soon as the end of next week, to launch that. So thank you for your patience. I know some of you have pre-ordered and have been emailing us and waiting. Thank you so much for your patience. It really is coming. We're humbled and privileged and honored to have had the opportunity to write it. It has been a really fun journey, both in the podcast and the book. So that's coming soon as well. So.
Yeah. So tell your friends about it. And for Letter 30, this is the Screwtape Letters podcast, confronting evil in our time. And we'll see you next time.